song Poker.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Song Poker.
Let me stop you there, Ian, please, because I must make a public apology, a heartfelt one, sincere apology to our listeners, because we did an erroneous piece of information regarding a Christmas song on our last episode.
Oh no!
Yeah.
What did we get wrong?
We got something horribly wrong. Where you suggested that during the closing titles of Die Hard, the song "Let It Snow, Let It Snow, Let It Snow" was performed by Dino, and it wasn't.
Oh, so who performed it in Die Hard?
It was Vaughn Monroe.
I don't like the sound of him.
Well, I think he was very popular way before Dino. You know, Dino did do a version, but sadly it was Vaughn Monroe. So I'm really sorry to all the listeners. We do like to fact-check things before they get garbled out of our gobs, but in this case,
I mean, this
we were
does
wrong.
Yeah, this kind of blows a hole in what we do, and kind of now the listener is going to have like an element of doubt over everything we say.
I think we are unreliable narrators.
I think we have lost the public trust
and all credibility.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's be honest, I didn't have much to start with.
Oh, but and also a little addendum as well, last Christmas did finally reach number one at Christmas. We talked about it before being number one, but never quite making the Christmas. But 39 years after its original release, George and Andrew finally sat atop the Christmas charts in 2023. That was just slightly after we recorded the pod.
Well, that's wonderful. Could you just quickly talk us through the algorithm so we all understand how the charts work nowadays?
No, sorry, no idea. I think it was Andrew Ridgely's family that that purchased quite a few.
Just sort of kept streaming it constantly.
Yeah.
We've done our any other business. We so that's technically the end of the meeting, unless you want to go to the top of the agenda and just chat about stuff we've been listening to lately.
Well, let's do that, Mr. Chairman.
Well, all right then. I'm going to tap the desk with my little gavel. It's a pen, but
does that make you feel
audio,
official?
It does, actually. I need some of those little sort of half glasses, and then I can pretend I work in a bank, which
you've always wanted.
Which
to
isn't
do.
Well. Thinking about it, when you were a kid, being a bank manager was like, you know, you're a big, responsible, busy, sensible person. And now working in a bank, there's like one employee per bank. There's one bank per county, and they're just running around kicking the machines to make them work. So it's not the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what have you been listening to lately?
Well, inspired by the trailer for the PlayStation game Grand Theft Auto 6, which is due out sometime in 2025, but they've released the trailer very early, and lots of people clamouring over it. In fact, I think it got to about 100 million views within a day or so. It was extraordinary. And obviously this will be a massive media event, but the trailer features a song by Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Actually, I'm lying, it features a song by Tom Petty called Love is a Long Road. Now, I love that song, but I hadn't heard it for years and years and years, and so that inspired me to go out and buy his album Full Moon Fever. So I've been listening to that in the car. It's great, and it's such a great use of the song in this incredibly violent and cool trailer.
Are those both sort of things that you associate with Tom Petty, violence and coolness?
One of them is, but I won't tell you which one. I guess it's a sort of, because I think the game is set in a sort of Florida, Miami kind of world. So I guess that's the Tom Petty connection. But you wouldn't automatically assume. I think for GTA 4... they use Welcome to the Jungle when it was an LA set game. But it does. So check out the trailer and listen to the song. It's great. How about you?
Well, I've been listening to a lot of stuff because I've just been sat in a car for the last week. This morning, I was listening to Elton John's Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. Because this year, he's announced he's retiring.
Yeah, I'll believe that when I see it.
From whatever. You know, he'll still put out a new greatest hits compilation every 6 months, sure. But I don't think he's going to be playing any more gigs in Colchester Castle Park or any of the prestigious venues he's been touring for the last couple of years.
Well, you know, to give him his credit, it was Colchester Football Community Stadium, I believe, rather than Castle Park.
I've done it again. Once again, listeners, I'm just a liar. I'm just talking shit.
Yeah, you've just denigrated Elton. Because Ollie Murs played the park. Oh. Craig David played the park. But Elton and Lionel Richie, they've played the stadium. That's a big fucking difference.
I mean, Elton is, he's royalty. We were talking about him recently on another podcast, and we all came up with like a top five songs by Elton John. And with one exception on one person's list, everything was written between 71 and 75. Yeah. So he's royalty for a very finite spell of a very long career.
Oh, I like his 80s stuff. I'm Still Standing would still be... Hang on a minute, sorry, you're doing another music podcast?
No, it's a sci-fi and culture podcast, but they wanted to do a special about Elton John.
Obviously.
They were desperate for topics.
Right.
And he was... He used to be in Star Trek.
It's something of the Ferengi about him.
Well, he certainly knows how to cling on to that piano. Thank you very much.
On your massive road trip down to New Mexico, which I'm extremely jealous of, did you have the radio on much?
No.
Or were you just CDing it?
It was all Spotify.
Right.
We were just streaming stuff. So, in fact, while we were down there, on the night before Christmas Eve, we went to the town of Truth or Consequences, which is a great name, and it's a great town. And we went to their brewery, and quite unexpectedly, they had some live music. And it was a lady called Minda Lacey, who is touring her album, The Loneliest Bug, which is on Spotify. So the next day I did listen to it to make sure that it was as good as I thought it was live. And she's great. And she's in that kind of, you know, Pacific Northwest singer-songwriter guitarist kind of thing. Her lyrics are really, really busy lyrics, really, really baroque. And yeah, I've listened to that a lot. That was really good.
Nice to stumble across something in a New Mexico bar and appreciate it.
What else did we listen to? We listened to The Best of Warren Zevon, obviously.
Oh, like. Yes, nice.
Well, because why wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
So I got to expose my wife to all kinds of songs that I haven't already inflicted on her by Warren Zevon. So there was Roland, the Headless Thompson Gunner. There were Lawyers, Guns and Money. There was lots of Sleeping While We're Dead, you know, that kind of thing. I listened to Trevor Sensor's double album from a couple of years ago, On Account of Exile.
Right.
I still like him a lot, even though he sounds more and more like a little gnome down a well. He's another singer-songwriter guitarist. That's obviously my thing. And this will surprise you.
Will it?
I've listened to three albums by Shakespeare's sister.
Christ. Yeah, that surprised me largely because I didn't realise they had three albums.
Well, no, this is the thing. I thought they only had the one that had Stay on it.
Yeah.
And then I went back and remembered that they had a previous album with Your History on it.
And then they've got back together, haven't they, in the last 5 years or so?
Yeah, so Siobhan sacked Marcella in, I think, 92.
Right.
While picking up an award, I believe, is such a great way to do it, isn't it? You know, thank you. On behalf of the band, I accept this award. By the way, if you're watching the other half of the band, you're out.
Well done, Siobhan.
So then she spent a big chunk of time, I think, on antidepressants. She made a couple of albums, but the label didn't particularly want to release them.
Living with Dave Stewart in LA, that kind of helped.
Yeah, well, you know, but in theory, that would have all been paradise because he had that syndrome.
What syndrome?
He had, this was a big thing at the time, he said he was suffering from, like, paradise syndrome. because his life was too perfect. It was quite well documented at the time.
Christ.
It's not a way to win sympathy, is it?
No, it's not.
Presumably, when he divorced Siobhan Fahey, maybe his life was somehow less pleasant.
I remember seeing some interviews with her about the kind of parties they had. I think that's where she met Marcella Detroit in LA, at one of her parties. But I think they had some good guests and some fun times. I think that would have been a cool place to hang.
I mean, you can sort of see what Dave Stewart brings to the party, if you'll pardon the expression.
Mm.
But I'm sure that probably no one in LA would have heard of Bananarama.
Maybe not. Yeah. I've noticed in the last couple of weeks on radio, Dua Lipa's getting a lot of airplay, as she tends to do. She's a very popular young artiste. And her new song is called Houdini, and with the lyrics, "Catch me before I go Houdini." And I was wondering whether she actually did really want to go like Houdini, because Houdini didn't go in a very good way.
I'm guessing he went sort of locked in a barrel chucked down the side of Niagara Falls or something.
Well, no, unfortunately not. He was he died of some sort of massive internal hemorrhaging, you know, some sort of awful trauma as a result of being punched on stage in the stomach by a devoted fan. Like, it was a sort of performative nonsense where he sort of you know, was flexing his abs and asking people to sort of punch him as hard as they could. And someone duly did, and a couple of days later he was dead.
Was it Iron Mike Tyson?
No, I don't believe it was anywhere near as hard. But I just want to, you know, protect Dua Lipa from that fate.
Do you think she's maybe confused the situation and believes Houdini to have died in some much nicer way that she's up for? Like, you know, overdosed on cheese Watsits and blankets and Netflix.
Well, let's hope. Let's hope that's the case. Maybe going Houdini doesn't mean what I think it is, and maybe it just means sort of, I don't know, performing a disappearing trick, actually, before she gets too involved, too romantically involved, is probably what it's about.
Yeah.
But I think
she means going commando.
Like Houdini. Yeah.
He was famous for never wearing underpants. Or, you know, it could be any one of a number of misunderstandings that might have happened there.
So what's our first episode of this new year, 2024, about, Ian?
Well, so obviously this is the first episode of the new year, 2024.
That's what I've just said.
So, yeah. So I thought let's talk about the best records from 2023.
Oh, last year's. Yeah, just to show how up-to-date and current we are, how contemporary an ear we have.
Well, or we could do 2007, but, I mean, it's up to you.
Yeah, let's do the 2023. I should caveat this by saying I've not bought very much new music whatsoever, not listened to a great deal of new music. It makes me feel terribly old, and I fear the day when I'm going to be doing pub quizzes and, you know, there are very current music questions which I just won't have any clue. It will be like a foreign language to me.
Well, I suppose what happens to music fans is that by the time you get to your 30s, most of the bands you grew up loving have kind of broken up, and people are dying and people are giving up, and you run out of new stuff that you feel any kind of genuine involvement with, and then you've got to kind of listen to new stuff and force yourself to do it for the sake of it, or just become a backlist person.
Yes, that's right. It does take an enormous effort. I'm quite grateful to... I don't have Spotify or anything like that, but I do listen to Radio 6 quite a lot, BBC Radio 6, and I'm quite grateful to them for introducing me to new artists, because otherwise I'd have absolutely no idea. I mean, I don't read Smash Hits anymore. Is Smash Hits even a thing?
Who knows? I mean, well, you ask if it's a thing, but how else would one find out the lyrics to the latest song by the Pet Shop Boys or Technotronic featuring Yar Kid K?
Yeah, exactly. I have no idea. So presumably Smash Hits is still a thing.
If you work for Smash Hits and you're listening, let us know. Tell us the lyrics to a song I mean, that's pretty much all they did in that magazine, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Here are the lyrics to some songs. Here's a poster of Carol Decker / Madonna.
God, I'd love to see that picture.
Carol Decker / Madonna. I think it would be the other way around, and I'm pretty sure there was a picture like that in Madonna's book Sex.
Featuring Carol Decker. Oh, God.
Yeah.
I remember Big Daddy Kane and Vanilla Ice and Naomi Campbell, but Carol Decker, I'm not sure. Anyway, 2023 saw new music from Blur. It was a surprise return from Everything But the Girl. The Rolling Stones, we've covered already in a previous... That album would make my top list for the year. Kylie had a new album. The National, Jessie Ware.
The National had two new albums.
Oh, that's right, of course, yeah.
Yeah. Both good. Would have made one really long, very good record. But I don't know, just releasing two albums 6 months apart just kind of annoys me. It's like, if you're going to go big, go big.
What do you think the reasoning was? Laziness?
No, I don't think it would have been laziness. I think it would have been avarice.
Right.
You know, if they're going to buy this album, let's make them buy two albums.
Yeah.
You know.
But why 6 months apart is my reasoning.
Well, I mean, because, you know, it's not Use Your Illusion 1 or 2. No one's going to get away with putting out two big albums on the same day again.
That's true.
And maybe they hadn't finished the second one. I prefer the second one, if I'm being honest. From Alphabet City to Smoke Detector. I think that's a great song.
But basically you're saying that the National are essentially really greedy.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Very good. What albums floated your boat?
Well, I've boiled it down to kind of my favourite three. And like you, apart from that, yes, Jessie Ware, yes, Kylie, yes, the National. But my number three would be Invisible Ink by Charlie Hall. Now, Charlie Hall is the drummer from The War on Drugs, but he's been kind of his own man in the kind of Philly music scene for about 20 years. And the record he's put out kind of does sound a bit like a War on Drugs album without the singer or the guitars, but that's no bad thing. But also it's got all kinds of instruments on it, and there are jazz influences, and there's slower stuff and quite filmic stuff. So for an instrumental album, it's surprisingly diverse and kind of has different textures. So that would be in my list.
So an instrumental album by a drummer who's the composer.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
And because, you know, that links one of my choices as well. Tyshawn Sorey's album. Technically, it's a jazz album. Sorry, don't puke in your own mouth. Or in anyone else's mouth.
I can't puke in yours. We're 3,000 miles apart.
Yeah. It's a fantastic album. It's called Continuing. He's been going for quite a few years, but the level of musicianship on it is extraordinary. So being from a jazz background, you expect sort of improvisation to be key to this. I'm always a bit wary about modern jazz. I find it a little bit formless and nebulous, and I'm not a muso. I don't really have the lexicon to really... critique it.
Is it that jazz people are better than us, or is it just like the difference between listening to French and listening to Spanish?
No, I think it's there's a tacit understanding between jazz people that they know they are better than us.
But is that true?
Oh well, but I don't know because I'm not a jazz person. I suspect it is. If I'm in a smoky basement listening to some jazz, I immediately do feel better than most people. But whether I'm part of their group, I don't know.
I mean, if it's a smoky basement, 20 years after the smoking ban,
you're in trouble.
World, you are. You've clearly wandered into a very heavy secret kind of sect. It's 20 minutes of hooting and parping, and that's not, you know. As I've said before, I like the words. I like singing. I like a kind of narrative, ideally.
And that's fair enough. But I think it's also about, you know, music making you feel something. And this album continuing. Yes, there's some improvisation. Yes, there's popping and hooting. But it also, for the last few albums, he's kind of taken some jazz standards, some classics, and just then played around with them. So there is form and there is structure, and then what he does with it, I think, is quite remarkable.
I mean, I'm not going to pretend I'm going to listen to it, because I'm well, several evolutionary rungs below you.
No, it's not. Well, yes, but you should check out some of his live performances on YouTube, because he's a really, really clever guy. And I mean, I think he's a multi-instrumentalist as well, but yeah, and a professor of contemporary music. But as a composer and a drummer, how does that work?
You compose stuff, and maybe it's like, you know, Billy Corgan in the Pumpkins. He's notionally the lyricist and guitarist, but he does all the music on all the records and doesn't let the band members near it until they're on stage somewhere.
Right.
So I suppose if you've just got that ability to hear the whole thing and that kind of Prince-like quality of being able to play absolutely everything and do it all yourself, then you can be so much more. I mean, if you're a drummer, let's say you're a drummer like Ringo Starr, and even being a drummer, you're kind of holding on by the skin of your teeth to that very low bar. And I say low bar, I tried to drum once and I really don't have what it takes to be a drummer. But you know, there are some people who can play their instrument, and there are some people who can play lots of instruments, and there's quite a difference.
They think about music and hear music and see music in a different way. I mean, Phil Collins must have, maybe, you know, when he when he composed In the Air Tonight, everything started with that drum fill.
And he worked back from that.
And then the lyrics was sort of added last, and the melody was last.
Because I was going to say that people like that, they can kind of smell music. Being able to segue from being able to smell music to Something in the Air Tonight is kind of an unfortunate link, so I'm not going to make it. But who knows, maybe Phil Collins could smell something that night when he was coming up with that song.
So it's a sensory gift they have on all the senses.
I think so.
Shared.
I think it's,
yeah.
They can see colours, and you have auras, and probably they just wake up. Like Paul McCartney, they wake up with a fully formed song that they heard in a dream, and they quickly release it before anyone can find out who wrote it.
Or they smell something in the wind.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Something coming in the air tonight, or a candle. So let's pick, my number two album of the year. Oh God, I am actually going to pick Blur, The Ballad of Darren.
I knew you would.
Yeah, now there is a reason.
Mm.
Well, there's two reasons. The first is I quite like some of it. So again, about 6 months ago, we were reviewing it on Strangers in Space, and I was saying that I really liked the first three songs, and the whole of the second side, I was just waiting for something to happen. And one of my co-presenters on that show said, no, I think this is their most sort of coherent, sustained and musical album. And I sort of, you know, smiled politely, and internally I disagreed. But having listened to it a few times since then, it really is quite a thoughtful, sustained and good an extremely musical record. It doesn't have any of that really annoying childish filler that they used to stick on their records. You know, there'd always be like a couple of 2 minute songs that were just everyone shouting and playing everything as hard as they could.
And why is that? Do you think, is that because Damon sort of, it's more of a Damon album, isn't it, this? And it's kind of, you know, he wrote it all, didn't he? Do you think he bossed the recording studio sessions as well?
I think he gave everyone almost fully formed songs and said, you know, do what you do. But they didn't have the scope to start making the kind of racket that they used to. You know, you think of things like Globe Alone or Dan Abnormal or any of that kind of mid-90s rubbish. So yeah, they just got the good songs, which were too sort of slow, middle-aged and melancholy to be on a Gorillaz album. So I think that automatically makes for a really strong record. And yeah, you know, they're not trying to be big or clever anymore.
Thank God.
And so, yeah, thank God. When I first heard the album, I was all about St. Charles Square and then Barbaric, two of the three singles.
Mm.
And then everything after that kind of just dropped off a cliff. But now I enjoy that kind of last seven or eight song sweep towards the album's closing. It starts with the kind of pop stuff and then that tails off. And then it just becomes really kind of surprisingly consistent and mature. So I do like it very much.
I read some reviews at the time that were saying, oh, it's Blur finally putting their Britpop selves to bed, or out to pasture. And it was kind of a little unnecessary or a little lazy. I mean, it, for fuck's sake, it's 30 years ago. And of course they're mature and of course they've developed as artists, so why would it sound like that? Why should it sound like
that? I mean, do they, you know, because Blur have changed. You know, the Gallagher brothers are still making exactly the same music they've always made. Suede are basically still making the same stuff they were making in the 90s. Admittedly, it's brilliant and it's not kind of quite so of a time. But yeah, Blur have obviously changed a lot. Damon's done a lot in Gorillaz and he's had a couple of solo records and he's done operas. And Dave stood for election and didn't win.
Yes.
Alex James has made a lot of cheese. And who knows what Graham's been doing.
I think he's been working on, he did a few soundtracks, didn't he, in his own stuff anyway. But I mean, I can't bear three of the four of them. However, I do like Blur. I think the band are greater than the sum of their parts, is greater than the sum of its parts. I also, I think it's my favourite album cover of the year as well. That Martin Parr photo of the swimming pool, isn't it? I love it.
It's weird. I don't like that cover, but I think because I thought it was going to be a very different record to what it turned out to be. When you saw it was called The Ballad of Darren, you think, oh God, they are still in that kind of mid-90s London fields, caricature-heavy, satirising.
It's a shit title.
But there is a real-life Darren who that album is named for.
Right.
Someone who has been cajoling Damon to finish writing that bloody ballad for the last 20 years, and hence the album finally was called The Ballad of Darren. But yeah, when I heard that, I thought, oh, that sounds terrible. And then I saw the cover, I thought, oh, it reminds me of Stereotypes. And that was a terrible record.
Right.
So, I mean The Great Escape, I don't mean Stereotypes.
Did you also listen to Cracker Island, the Gorillaz album? Because Damon's had a really busy year, isn't he? I mean, it's quite impressive.
Yeah. Of all the Gorilla albums, I like Cracker Island possibly the least. And it might be that so much came out last year that I didn't give it a lot of listens and a lot of time. But again, you know, I love a lot of the collaborations on it. You've got Stevie Nicks and lots of lesser human beings as well. But I think Damon Albarn is a very interesting figure, because I think musically he's one of our most creative and important people since probably Bowie. I imagine he's a terrible human being.
I suspect he is, yeah. And I just can't give him the credit that he probably deserves.
But I mean, the Gorillaz albums are great. The Blur albums are, you know, there's some great stuff on there. He's made two solo albums, one of which was brilliant. The other one, I listened to it once and haven't listened to it since. But generally, he's a really reliable, dependable songwriter. Anyway, so I really like The Ballad of Darren, and that's in my top three too.
My next choice would be the record by Boy Genius. Are you aware of Boy Genius?
Actually, no, I am. I might be aware. Was he the lead singer in Culture Club? So it's, or am I thinking of someone else?
It's an American, dare I say, supergroup? I don't know. Born out of a friendship and of, I guess, a mutual admiration of three artists, Julian Baker, Phoebe Bridges, Lucy Dacus, all excellent singer-songwriters in their own right, and sort of just working with each other, and that sort of just that desire to collaborate, I guess, has just led to this sort of little project maybe about 8 years ago, and then they put it on the back burner, and then they came back with a debut studio album called The Record, and they've done an EP as well later in the year called The Rest, which was also great. But honestly, lyrically they're all fantastic. Their voices are just gorgeous together, just, you know. So yeah, if you like sort of indie folk rock singer-songwriters, I think you would really love this album. Actually,
it does sound exactly like my cup of tea. I mean, I believe Phoebe Bridges was on the National album, so I've definitely heard at least one song.
Right, yeah, she's been really busy. I just think they're fantastic.
Cool. I'm noticing your top three is of sort of considerably better quality than my top three.
But bear in mind that my top three, you know, you don't even know if I've got a third in the top three. I might have only selected these two. I don't know about I can't attest to the quality as such. But I do think they are really good albums.
There's a credibility in yours that's sort of lacking.
No,
from mine. I've got a solo album by a drummer, and you know, the now sort of 10-yearly new album from a band who probably should have packed it in the late 90s.
Well, let's wait to my third choice. But actually, some friends of mine saw them live, and I'm gutted that I didn't this year when they were on tour. I think that would have been a good gig.
Well, if they play near me, then, you know, hop over and we'll go and check them out.
Yes, that would be good.
This is not going to help my sort of lack of credibility one iota, but if I'm being honest, my favourite record from last year was by Lana Del Rey. Did you know there's a tunnel under Ocean Boulevard?
Wish I could tell you now. I wrote you a note, but I didn't send it, 'cause that's the best man.
Again, I knew that this would be in your top three.
Well, in my defence, it's been in most sort of top ten. You know, all the music press and all the newspapers do their roundups at this time of year, because they're desperate for content between kind of Christmas and kind of April, when good music starts coming out again.
Mm.
So I've been reading a few of those, and most people seem to have said, you know, it's not her best album, but it's good enough to be in the top five or the top ten or whatever. And what I think she does, as I think I've probably said before, is she kind of gets a little bit better with each record. So not necessarily each record gets better than the last one, but she kind of refines and crystallizes what she does and what her vibe is and what the kind of aesthetic is all about. So I think this is another really great album. It's got guest appearances from people like Father John Misty and I want to say John Legend.
Is it John Baptiste?
Yes, that's who I'm thinking of.
Mm.
And it's the usual, it's quite a nice long album. Nothing's rushed, nothing outstays its welcome,
as opposed to The Ballad of Darren, by the way. Isn't that like under half an hour?
It's about 33 minutes if right. You don't have the bonus two right. tracks.
So how long is this, because it deserves to be a long album with a long title.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's over an hour, but it feels like you get about an hour's worth of Lana.
Mm.
And that's all any man could take, I think. But she's, because she does, she, what she does for me, she's got that David Lynch-y musical vibe. If he was making The Return this week, he'd have put Lana Del Rey in it, I think.
Right.
Because he's a fan of her. She's obviously a massive fan of him and what he does. And there's that kind of, you know, the bruised and smoky Hollywood starlet glamour, the kind of long-suffering characters.
Isn't there? There's a song of hers called Norman fucking Rockwell, isn't there?
There's an album.
Oh, it's an album, right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so she plays on that, does she? That's the Norman Rockwell idea of, you know, the sort of utopian Americana.
Absolutely. She's got, amongst her kind of palette of themes, there is that kind of the American dream versus the American reality.
Mm.
And, yeah, I would say her last four records, from Norman fucking Rockwell through to Ocean Boulevard, have been slightly less pop and slightly more thoughtful and, you know, kind, I suppose I want to say orchestral. They're not orchestral, but they feel more musical and more experimental and more diverse. And this one doesn't have maybe anything that would bother what we used to call the hit parade, but that doesn't stop it being 10 out of 10 goddamn lovely.
You've sold it well.
Well, have you ever listened to any?
Not consciously, and I don't know why that is. I can't, maybe because I don't listen to Radio 1, I don't know.
I think I discovered her, and it would have been 2010 when Video Games came out, which was, I think, her first or second single. I think because it was on MTV and VH1,
right,
back when those channels showed music videos, kids. Before it was wall-to-wall reality TV, they used to show a lot of music videos. It was quite important during the 80s and 90s.
Do they not now?
No, I think it's all Pimp My Ride and that show about the Just Tattoo of Us and things like that. And I don't think they do show any music videos. Or if they do, it's like half an hour of, you know, R&B videos at midnight. Mm. Sad, really. Do you have a third record?
Well, as I said, it probably would have been the Stones album, because I do enjoy it. We've already covered it in the previous pod, and I was thinking about talking about Only the Strong Survive, which was Bruce Springsteen album, not because it was my favorite. I largely hated it.
Oh.
But actually I think it was released really late. Hang on a minute, let me just look it up, because I think it was released really late 22, so actually it would just be discounted from this conversation.
Well, I mean, could we sneak it in on a technicality, because if it came out very late, what was the exact date it was released?
I think it was released in November of 22.
Oh no, you can't have that. That's,
no, I'm
that's
sorry, no,
early.
We won't.
If it was a December album, I'd have taken it.
But I'd like to just register my disgust at his versions of Do I Love You, Indeed I Do, and Night Shift. I thought they were fucking horrible. Anyway, that's enough of that.
Well, if you're listening, Bruce, you've been told.
Another album that I was going to mention, but I don't, again, feel particularly qualified to talk about, is the Young Fathers album, Heavy Heavy, because it arrived heralded, and there's lots of sort of, I don't know, industrial noise and hip-hop beats, and I couldn't enjoy it, doubtless is my fault.
Well, I mean, it's not a question of fault. I think fundamentally we just, I don't know, my theory, I've got two competing theories, that music stops having any kind of personal connection after a certain point in your life, and then you're kind of forcing yourself, like I said at the top of the show, you're forcing yourself to keep listening to new music to keep your hand in, but really it has no emotional connection because you're not in the same emotional place you were in your 20s and early 30s, and you don't invest as much in music as you used to in those days, blah, blah, blah. The other argument I would make is that it all sounds the same now.
Well, there is that. Yes, Grandad, that's true. Perhaps that's why I'm sort of more listening more to jazz, not in an attempt to be better than people that don't listen to jazz, but just because it makes me feel something. And also, lyrics-wise, if you're listening to new music by young artists, it's quite difficult sometimes to listen to lyrics that are written by 20-year-olds. Or is that massively contradictory? Because the Stones' best stuff or Dylan's best stuff, the Beatles' stuff, Bowie's best stuff, it's all written in their 20s.
I think it's our perspective. So when we started listening to music, what musicians in their 20s were writing was kind of glamorous and or profound. And we've, memorized those lyrics and we live with those lyrics, and those lyrics are fine. But now that if you follow the kind of pendulum swing, we're at the other end of the spectrum looking down on writers in their 20s. They're not saying anything new.
Mm.
I mean, that's not a criticism. They're saying the same old thing in different ways, but we have heard it all before and we do know, and we're not 20 anymore and we know a lot of stuff they don't know. So there's less of a reverence, I suppose, towards younger songwriters.
Maybe.
Men of our great and advancing years.
But and new music is not the sole realm of youth either. For example, The National released two, and they are our age, aren't they? They must be about our age.
Easily. Maybe. They could be a bit older.
They might be a bit younger. Older. Who knows? But
let's not say that. Let's say they're probably a couple of years older.
But I've not...
Because that still gives us time to have a pop chart hit.
Yeah, but I've not yet engaged with them either. I think one of the biggest tracks of the year was the song Flowers by Miley Cyrus, which I do actually really like.
I love that. Yeah. I really like that record, but I didn't put it in my top three because I thought you'd hit me.
Ah, no, that's a really good... And she did another... What was it called? Not Jaded, that's Aerosmith. What's...
No, she did a song called Jaded.
She did as well, didn't she? I like that one as well.
And I like Wild Card as well, because it's a good gym song.
Yeah, she's good, isn't she?
She is. I love Miley.
Yeah.
I never thought that would happen.
Yeah.
But I do. I really do like her. I think it's because she kind of... When I'm in the gym, she's kind of my mental image of, sort of thinness.
That's what you'd like to look like.
That's what I want to look like, maybe different hair, though. I'm not sure I could get away with that kind of cascade of curly nonsense at my age.
No. Well, I look forward to seeing the fruits of your gym labour next time you're over in the UK and you have legs like Miley. Admiring you.
We should totally do a sitcom called Gym Labour. About Jim Broadbent becoming leader of the local Labour Party. we'll discuss that one offline. Yeah, next time I come home, I will be with cocooned within the body of Miley Cyrus.
Excellent.
I figure that's pretty much all we've got time for on this. I mean, we've got as much time as we want. Obviously, that's the beauty of the format.
Yeah.
But I could do with a wee. I think I've got some lunch happening in another room, so I'm gonna probably call this one dead.
Good. Hello to 2024, onwards and upwards, and we'll see you on the next episode. What will it be? I don't know.
I do know, but I'm not going to say because I think we'll get more listeners if we don't say. So yeah, see you next time. See you in a couple of weeks, everyone. Happy New Year.
Bye bye.
Song Poker was produced by Electric Sodcast Studios.